Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Complaint by Sarah Ahmed, narrated by Pearl Hewitt. Publisher's Note: This audiobook contains references to visuals present in the print and ebook editions of the book. Introduction. Hearing Complaint. To be heard as complaining is not to be heard. To hear someone as complaining is an effective way of dismissing someone. You do not have to listen to the content of what she is saying if she is just complaining or always complaining. Consider how many self-help books teach you how not to complain or how to stop complaining. Titles are telling, "No Complaints, How to Stop Sabotaging Your Own Joy." "A Complaint-Free World, How to Stop Complaining and Start Enjoying the Life You Always Wanted." "Stop Complaining, Adjust Your Mindset and Live a Happier Life." Instructions to stop complaining are messages about complaint. The message received: to complain is not only to be negative, it is to be stuck on being negative. To complain is how you would stop yourself from being happy, to stop others from being happy too. Complaint as a killjoy genre. Who is heard as complaining? A hearing can be a judgment. A hearing can be a history. We can turn to the archives of black feminism to hear how that judgment has a history. In one instance, Lorene Carey, a working-class African-American woman, is writing about her mother. "I always saw it coming. Some white department store manager would look at my mother and see no more than a modestly dressed young black woman making a tiresome complaint. He'd use that tone of voice they used when they had important work elsewhere. Uh-oh." Then he'd dismiss her with his eyes. "I'd feel her body stiffen next to me, and I'd know that he'd set her off." Carey always saw it coming. She has come to know her mother's reactions. She can feel them as they happen. Earlier, she describes how her mother had studied the rich white people she'd worked for, as her mother's mother had done before, and how Carey studied her mother. To study her mother is to learn what sets her off. The rich white people, store managers, employers, who dismiss her as a modestly dressed young black woman making a tiresome complaint. Carey can hear and see it herself. The tone of voice they used, how he would dismiss her with his eyes. She can also hear her mother hear it, see her mother see it. Carey shows how black feminist knowledge can be passed down as intimacy with bodily reactions. To be heard as making a tiresome complaint is to be heard as being tiresome, as distracting somebody from doing important work elsewhere. In that moment, it is history we hear, a history of how black women are heard as just complaining, history as going on, history as going on about it. This story is not just about how her mother as a black woman is heard as making a tiresome complaint. It is a story of how her mother reacts, how her body stiffens, how she is set off. Her mother refuses the message, "This is not important, you are not important, what is important is elsewhere." Those deemed tiresome complainers have something to teach us about complaint, to teach us about the politics of how some are received, to teach us what it takes to refuse a message about who is important, what is important, what it takes, who it takes. I found Carey's memoir because it was referenced in Patricia Hill Collins's classic text, Black Feminist Thought. Collins draws upon Carey's description to show how emergent black women went about surviving the everyday disrespect and outright assaults that accompany controlling images. Citation, too, can be hearing. We depend on what others can hear. Collins could hear what Carey's mother could hear, because of what Carey could hear her mother hear. Collins uses that hearing to show what black women know about controlling images in the strategies they develop to survive them. A complaint, how you show what you know. Later in the text, Collins evokes the figure of the complainer. With reference to the problem of colour blindness, how racism is often reproduced by not being seen, she observes, "Black women who make claims of discrimination and who demand that policies and procedures may not be as fair as they seem can more easily be dismissed as complainers who want special unearned favours." There is history to that dismissal. A history can be made up of many instances. In another instance, Amrit Wilson discusses a report written by Hamida Kazi in the feminist magazine Spare Rib in 1976. The story is about an Asian woman who is assaulted by her husband. Wilson offers a subtle account of how such stories are framed by the media and delivered to a wider public. She writes, "When such stories are reported, they are used to show how Asians are uncivilized and that they should be setting their community in order instead of complaining about racism." This is a rather light use of the word complaining. It might not seem worth singling out. Uses can be light when words are heavy. Complaining, complaint, complainer. We can be weighed down by the words as well as judgments. We learn from a single sentence that to speak about racism is to be heard not only as complaining, but as complaining about the wrong thing, to make racism a complaint as how some avoid addressing problems in their own community. Racism becomes that tiresome complaint, how some tire themselves out or tire others out, stopping themselves from doing what they should be doing, setting their community in order. The judgment of complaint can also be an order, to stop complaining as a demand to set things right. Wilson shows that a story used for racist purposes, evidence of Asians being uncivilized, can be the same story used to dismiss racism as complaint. Racism is often enacted by the dismissal of racism as complaint. Stories about violence against Asian women are instrumentalized to demand allegiance to a national project. Allegiance would be enacted by being willing to locate the problem of violence in your community rather than in the nation. The latter violence we often summarize as racism. You can become a complainer because of where you locate the problem. To become a complainer is to become the location of a problem. Wilson, by hearing how Asian women activists are answering back, to reference the title of her piece, teaches us how some are willing to become complainers to locate a problem, to become the location of a problem. A feminist ear. It was important to me to open this book with how complaints are not heard, or how we are not heard when we are heard as complaining. My aim in the book is to counter this history by giving complaint a hearing, by giving room to complaint, by listening to complaint. A history can become routine. A history can be how those who complain are dismissed, rendered incredible. I think of my method in this project as being about hearing, lending my ear, or becoming a feminist ear. I first introduced the idea of a feminist ear in my book Living a Feminist Life. I was describing a scene from the feminist film A Question of Silence, directed by Marlene Gorris in 1982. In the scene, a secretary is seated at a table. She makes a suggestion. The men at the table say nothing. It is as if she has not said anything. A man at the table then makes the same suggestion. They rush to congratulate him on his good idea. She sits there silently. A question of silence. She can hear how she was not heard. She knows how and why she is passed over. She is just a secretary. She is the only woman seated at a table of men. She is not supposed to have ideas of her own. She is supposed to write down their ideas. To hear with a feminist ear is to hear who is not heard, how we are not heard. If we are taught to tune out some people, then a feminist ear is an achievement. We become attuned to those who are tuned out, and we can be those, which means becoming attuned to ourselves can also be an achievement. We learn from who is not heard about who is deemed important or who is doing important work. To return to the sharpness of Carey's Black Feminist Insights. we learn how only some ideas are heard if they are deemed to come from the right people. Right can be white. What would you say or do if you were the one being passed over? What would you say or do if your ideas were heard as originating with another person? Would you complain? Would you say something? Express something? The question of complaint is intimately bound up with the question of hearing, of how we express ourselves, given what or who is passed over. To hear complaint is to become attuned to the different forms of its expression. We can pause here and consider the different meanings of complaint. A complaint can be an expression of grief, pain, or dissatisfaction, something that is a cause of a protest or outcry, a bodily ailment, or a formal allegation. In researching complaint, I began with the latter sense of complaint. But, as I will show throughout this book, the latter sense of complaint, as formal allegation, brings up other, more effective and embodied senses. It was a feminist ear that led me here. It was what I could hear in complaint or from complaint that led me to the project. I was inspired to do this project after taking part in a series of inquiries into sexual harassment and sexual misconduct that had been prompted by a collective complaint lodged by students. Another way of saying this, the project was inspired by students. If my task in this book is to hear complaints, to listen to them, to work through them and with them, the book is a continuation of a task I began with students. Where we hear complaint matters. When we hear complaint matters. I still remember the day I first heard from the students who had put forward a collective complaint. The students had requested a meeting. I was asked to attend as a feminist academic from a different department. The students had requested this meeting because an inquiry into sexual harassment that had taken place over the summer of that year did not find sufficient evidence, or evidence that took the right form, to take their complaint further. The students I met that day had already formed a collective to write a complaint. I learned from them how and why they had formed that collective. You too will have an opportunity to learn from and about their collective in Chapter 7 of this book. I also learned there had been a number of earlier inquiries prompted by earlier complaints. I have since found out how common this is. When you are involved in a complaint, you come to hear about earlier complaints. You come to hear about what you did not know about. I attended the meeting with the students with another academic. Before the meeting, I wrote to her to say that it had been stressed to me that the institutional will is such that any formal letters of complaint will have immediate consequences. If I passed on this stress before the meeting, the students taught me to question it. By insisting that the students individually make formal written complaints, the university was asking them to give up their anonymity, to make themselves even more vulnerable than they had already made themselves. The following day, I wrote to the colleague with whom I attended the meeting that if the position was that we needed formal written complaints by individuals to reopen the inquiry, then strategically, we might need to try to get that evidence. But we also agreed that we needed to push for a change of position. We realized our task ought not to be to persuade the students to make formal written complaints, but to persuade the university to hear the complaints that had already been made. We wrote a report giving a full account of what the students had shared with us. We quoted a legal expert who had confirmed that formal written statements should not be necessary to establish the balance of probability that harassment had happened, which was all that was needed by law to establish. We concluded the report by stating that those who have been harassed should not be made responsible for redressing it. Listening to the students, we had realized just how much work, time, and energy they had already given to identifying and documenting the problem. As I will explore throughout this book, making a complaint is never completed by a single action. It often requires you do more and more work. It is exhausting, especially given that what you complain about is already exhausting. The report we wrote up after the meeting led to further communications between academics and administrators to the reopening of the inquiry, and then to further inquiries. We can identify a problem with this sequence of events. For the student's complaint to be heard, or for the complaint to be heard with a stronger commitment to action, it had to be written up by academics. Complaints, it seems, go further the extent to which those positioned higher up in an organization express them or give support to them. The path of a complaint, where a complaint goes, how far it goes, teaches us something about how institutions work, what I call in part one of this book, institutional mechanics. It should not be the case that support from those who are more established is necessary for a complaint to be heard. But when this is the case, that support can be vital to stop a complaint process from being stalled. To work on a complaint is often to work out how a complaint is stalled. It was given how the process had stalled that we agreed on a compromise. Students could make complaints anonymously. When the requirements for the form of complaint were loosened, more students came forward to testify in the inquiries. There was nothing automatic about this process. Complaints did not rush out like water from a tap that had been unblocked. It still took a conscious and collective effort by students to make complaints that would be, in their terms, legible to the university. It is not only that a complaint is not completed by a single action. You often have to keep making the same complaints in different ways before they will be heard or in order for them to be heard. Many of the students who testified in these inquiries shared their stories with me. Those stories remain their stories. I do not share their stories in this book, but I have written complaint with their stories in mind. I hear their stories alongside those I have collected for this book. To become a feminist ear is to hear complaints together. A feminist ear can be understood as an institutional tactic. To hear complaints, you have to dismantle the barriers that stop us from hearing complaints. And by barriers, I am referring to institutional barriers, the walls, the doors that render so much of what is said, what is done, invisible and inaudible. If you have to dismantle barriers to hear complaints, hearing complaints can make you more aware of those barriers. In other words, hearing complaints can also be how you learn how complaints are not heard. It takes work to hear complaints because it takes work for others to reach you. Becoming a feminist ear meant not only hearing the students' complaints, it meant sharing the work. It meant becoming part of their collective. Their collective became ours. I think of that ours as the promise of feminism. Ours. Not as a possession, but as an invitation, an opening, a combining of forces. We worked together to confront the institution more directly about its role in enabling and reproducing a culture of harassment. The harder it is to get through, the more you have to do. The more we tried to confront the problem of sexual harassment as an institutional problem, the more we refused to accept weak statements about what the university was committed to doing, the more we questioned how they were changing policies without communicating with anyone why we needed to change policies, chapter one, the more resistance we encountered. Complaint, a path of more resistance. The institution becomes what you come up against. At times it felt like we were getting somewhere. At other times, the wall came down and we realized that however far they were going to go, they were not going to go far enough. We could not even get public acknowledgement from the administration that there had been any inquiries. It was as if they had never happened. To hear complaint can be to hear that silence, what is not being said, what is not being done, what is not being dealt with. It was during one of those times, walls coming down, the sound of silence can be walls coming down, that I decided I wanted to conduct research on other people's experience of complaint. My own experience of working with students on these inquiries led me to this project. So much of what you do, the labour, the struggle, happens behind closed doors. No one knows about it. No one has to know about it. My desire to do this research came from a sense of frustration. the feeling of doing so much not to get very far. Frustration can be a feminist record. My desire to do this research also came from my own conviction that if you ask those who complain about their experiences of complaint, you will learn so much about institutions and about power. Complaint as feminist pedagogy. Yes, frustration can be a feminist record. Another way of putting this? Watch out. We have the data. The knowledge we acquire from being in a situation can sometimes require we leave a situation. What I learned about institutions from supporting a complaint led me to leave. At the time, it did not feel like a choice, but like what I had to do. I think back to that room where I first heard from the students. When you are involved in a complaint, you are still at work. You are still doing your work. I would keep entering that room, the same room in which we had that meeting. It was my department's meeting room, a much used room. We would have other meetings in that room, academic meetings, papers shuffling, papers and persons being rearranged. It was the same room, but it might as well have been a different room. Perhaps it was a different room. It was filled with memories, occupied by a history that felt as tangible as the walls. What you hear in the room comes to fill that room. I could not just turn up at the same old meetings, doing the same old things. Collecting complaints. I decided to undertake this research on complaint before I resigned, but I did not begin the research until over a year after. That I resigned changed the nature of the research as well as how I could do it. I shared that I resigned in a post on my blog on May 30th, 2016. My resignation was widely reported in the national media less than 2 weeks later. While I found the exposure difficult, I was moved and inspired by how many people got in touch with me to express their solidarity, rage, and care. I received messages from many different people telling me what happened to them when they had complained. I heard from others who had left their posts and professions as a result of a complaint. One story coming out can lead to more stories coming out. I realized something from what came out. By resigning from my post, I had made myself more accessible as a feminist ear. Having become a feminist ear within my own institution, I could turn my ear outward toward others working in other institutions. I think it was because I resigned in protest about the failure of the institution to hear complaints that people entrusted me with their stories of complaint. It remains my responsibility to earn that trust. Given that my own resignation put me in a better position to collect other people's stories of complaint, I am not just telling the story, I am part of the story. In Living a Feminist Life, I described my resignation as a snap, a feminist snap. Snap can be what you say when you make the same connection. A snap can also be the sound of something breaking. So often a complaint is understood as snapping a bond, breaking ties, connections to a university, to a department, to a project, to a colleague. One of the reasons some people do not hear about a complaint or are not willing to hear about a complaint is because of how it would threaten a bond they have to a university, a department, a project, or a colleague. Snap. When a break becomes a connection. Also snap. How we hear what each other can hear. A feminist ear can thus be a research method as well as an institutional tactic. I could write this book because of how many people shared with me their experiences of making complaints. I could write this book because of who I came to hear. My task is to hear about complaints from those who have made them. The data comes primarily from communications with academics and students who have made or considered making formal complaints at universities or comparable educational institutes about unequal or unjust working conditions or abuses of power, such as harassment and bullying. This book is a collection of their complaints. Of course, there are other complaints, other kinds of complaints, and thus other stories to tell about complaint. In order to hear the complaints that I collect here, I cannot hear all complaints. How did I come to collect these stories? Most people who participated in this research got in touch with me through my website or blog. Not everyone who got in touch with me went on to tell me their story. Sometimes getting in touch can be telling enough. People gave different reasons for getting in touch. Some said they wanted to help or to help out. One student emailed, "I write because I went through a years-long complaints procedure that I would like to share with you if you are still in this phase of your project and or if it might be helpful in your work." Another wrote, "Thank you so much for doing this study. In order to help out, I want to share my own experience in submitting a formal complaint to my university's reporting office after being sexually harassed by another student." Some people got in touch with me because they felt I would or could hear them. One student wrote, "And so do bear with me as I write this to you. I know you'll get it. You'll get me and what's happened and where one might go from here." Another student wrote, "I am writing because I need a feminist ear. Perhaps you can use this complaint in your work." To become a feminist ear is to indicate you are willing to receive complaints. An academic wrote, "I want the story to go somewhere apart from round and round in my head, which is why I am contacting you." It can be hard when our stories of complaint go round and round in our heads. It can feel like a lot of movement without getting very far. Telling someone the story of complaint can be how the story goes somewhere. To become a feminist ear is to give complaints somewhere to go. The project gathered momentum as I began to share stories of complaint in posts, lectures, and seminars. The more you share, the more you hear. I think some people offered to tell me their stories of complaint because they could connect their own experiences with the stories I had already shared. To share a story of complaint can be to make a connection. To share a story of complaint can be to add to a collection. A postgraduate researcher wrote to me, "I am happy to share my experience for your study if you are still collecting narratives." To collect can mean to go to a place and to bring something or somebody back. To collect can also mean to bring something together from different places or periods of time. To receive complaints, to hear them, is thus also to collect them. To go there is to go back. To bring something back is to bring us together. That most of the people whose experiences I share in this book got in touch with me has shaped the tone and texture of this work. Those who contacted me often had to pay a high price for the complaints they made. In fact, this is why some people contacted me. One former professor wrote, "I took an off-the-record grievance payout, not massive, and a much-reduced pension to get out of academia 2 years ago, after an unremitting 15 years of sexist and disablest bullying. I would be willing to participate in your study if you can guarantee complete confidentiality. I had to sign a gagging clause when I got my grievance payout, which, as I'm sure you are aware, is how universities typically try to cover up the sexism that is rampant within them." She needed me to keep her complaint confidential because of what the institution had covered up through the use of a gag clause or an NDA, non-disclosure agreement. To cover up a complaint is to cover over what the complaint was about. In this instance, sexist and ableist bullying, the sexism that is rampant within universities. You are more likely to share a story of complaint if you have been stopped from sharing that story. Another academic wrote, "I would be happy to talk about my experience of being pushed into an NDA." Many people who contacted me did so because of what they were pushed into or how they were pushed out. In other words, much of the data in this book came out of complaints that led people into direct confrontations with institutions. And by institutions, I would include the people employed by institutions, peers and colleagues, as well as administrators and managers. We do not need to assume that complaints about unequal working conditions or abuses of power necessarily lead to such confrontations to learn from those that do. There is so much to confront in these stories. I conducted interviews with 40 students, academics, researchers.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?